Hello, and welcome to episode 57 of Black Girl Squeak. This is the podcast where we celebrate Black femme genius, as coined by Indolore, with a squeak! I am Dee Dee. I go by Dust Daughter on all the social medias.
And I'm Enda. I go by Enda's Corner on Twitter.
And you can find the podcast on Twitter at Black Girl Squee. We have a Tumblr, which is Black Girl Squee. We're on Apple Podcasts and Google Play Podcasts for your listening pleasure. And you can check out all of the episodes of this and other shows on blackgirlsqueed.simplecast.fm. Really quickly, our spoiler policy is that we spoil shit. So if we mention a show, we might spoil it. That's the deal. Sorry, not sorry. We also squee really loud. We cuss a lot because we groan. And we also talk about dick.
Yes.
We might not be talking about dick today, though. But, you know.
Yeah.
It might come up. But.
Yeah, it might.
Yeah, but we're moving that segment out of the way for some other stuff. So. Yeah. Either way, we're not sorry.
No.
But you've been warned.
Yes.
So, with that, we will get into some squee-worthy news. And we're probably just going to run through most of this to get to a special segment. But,
yes.
Do you want to take this one?
Yeah. Okay. So, in our first item in Squeeworthy News, so many black women on magazine covers. Like, everybody put black women on their magazine covers for, like, their September issues. If you know anything about the fashion industry, the magazine industry, the September issues, those are, like, the start of fall issues, and those are a huge deal. And so, Lupita Nyong'o, she made the cover of Porter Magazine. Issa Rae, she is on the cover of Ebony Magazine. Tiffany Haddish is on the cover of Glamour Magazine. I actually got that one because they still send me that for some reason. And Slick Woods, in all her pregnant glory, is on the cover of Elle UK. A really exciting one, NJ Rodriguez, Dominique Jackson, India Moore, you may know as part of the cast of Pose, are on the cover of Out Magazine. Yes.
They had a whole spread, and it was in period with, like, 80s boomboxes.
Yes,
boom boxes.
The 80s
and
stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
So fly.
So cute. It really was. I loved it. Because I'm like, were any of y'all born in the 80s?
No.
So
bless their hearts.
They're most definitely playing a period piece. Like, that's history.
That's how you history. Know they're acting.
Yes.
They go into a period they don't know nothing about.
I know, right? And they played the hell out of it, though.
Yes, I
but,
did.
Yeah, okay. And Zendaya was on the cover of Marie Claire. And two really big ones. Rihanna was on the cover of British Vogue. Oh, it was so pretty. It was so pretty. And, of course, Beyonce was also on the cover of Vogue, but not only was she on the cover of Vogue, she made them use a black photographer.
For the first time in 100 and some odd years.
Yes.
Like 150 bullshit ass years.
Yes. And so I'm gonna give her that because it's usually, I think her name is Annie Leibovitz.
Leibovitz,
yeah. She's the, you know, main photographer, has been, you know, this legendary photographer for Vogue for decades, but she was like, no, black person, please.
Yes, she took over full editorial control for that issue. She did her own captions for each of the photos. Because Beyonce ain't really trying to do interviews no more. So she's like changing the game as far as magazines. And I think sales of British Vogue were, for the September issue, were higher than like having a black woman on the cover actually increased like circulation by a large margin. So, and they have a new editor for fashion, I think, or is he editor in chief or just fashion
I think
editor?
he's editor in chief. I think he's editor in chief. He's over the whole
Edward
thing.
Enfield. Anyways, things are really looking up for British Vogue now that they put it in the hands of a black person. So, to
All
all,
that black glory.
yes. And you, yeah. So, to all of these lovely ladies and anybody that we may have forgotten, because there were a lot of black women getting
Yes,
many
there
magazine
was a bunch.
covers. So to all of them, we give a big. Hey, I get to do this one. In which I turn the tables on my co-host and interview her. A couple of weeks ago, my esteemed co-host, Miss Enda Lauren, published the story Venus Witch's Ring in Strange Horizons. It's available online as a text post, and someone recorded an audio version of it. So if you subscribe to Strange Horizons podcast, you will be able to hear a podcast version of Venus Witch's Ring. And it's very beautifully read. So, but anyways, this hopefully you've heard about it and read it by now several times. So now I can ask, oh published author, Enda Lauren, to tell. Stop giggling. Others don't
I'm
giggle.
trying. I'm trying.
Tell us more about the story. There were several themes packed into just 7,000 words. And what do you hope readers get from your story?
Oh, wow. Okay. First of all, it's just like a lot of my stories, they always just kind of start off with these like little snippets of ideas I just haven't put together. And this one literally started with just kind of an idea of someone, being born at the exact moment another dies and kind of having their lives interconnected that way. But when I further developed it, it kind of turned into a crossroads story because because I started writing it for a different submission a couple years ago, and it was music themed, and so that's kind of how it started, and that, and having that idea of this woman finding out about another that she had no idea existed, and having to live her life, and having to make a decision, at the end. But I actually, in those first few incarnations, the Venus Witch's Ring wasn't even a part of it. I was actually just walking home from like the grocery store, and I was listening to Jimi Hendrix's Voodoo Child, the 15-minute live version, and I heard that line, and I'm like, wait a minute. And so just kind of, got that. And so, but what I am hoping to get from it, this is actually, it's kind of fitting to me that this is the first fiction I ever got published, professionally, is because it does tackle on a lot of things, like legacy, from preserving our legacies, and black women's labor, you know, especially behind the scenes and not being, you know, credited for what we do, and also just not having our genius recognized.
Yes.
We're going to talk a lot more about that later. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, not getting the rewards of our own work,
mm-hmm.
especially while we're here.
Mm. Ooh, like I said, lots of different themes. So you already kind of talked about a little bit about what inspired you to write it.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you structure the story the way that you did? For the very few of you who haven't read it, and you can just stop the podcast now and just go read it, strangehorizons.com. The story is structured, you see, you're given sort of vignettes of different events in one musician's life. So it's kind of structured by years.
Yeah.
And so what made you decide on that structure instead of just...
I very rarely just tell anything like a straight narrative, so I really do have trouble writing my way, even though I make attempts. But and also I was literally just kind of thinking, you know, time periods, and I if you notice, it is like every 9 years I just have a weird obsession with the number 9, so that's just all that was. And so, you know, you have her, you know, starting out in 78, which is the when the main character is going through a kind of this period in her life. But like I said, if you read it, you'll find out why. And just like every 9 years or so, you know, you come back to her and see where she's at in her life. And so this kind of like did give me a chance to just talk about like what different things were, you know, happening in music. Because like 78, you know, the height of disco, and this is like right before, you know, the June of 79, the whole, you know, disco sucks backlash and just killed a lot of things and was really, you know, detrimental for a lot of, you know, black and queer communities.
And also, because, you know, and also hip-hop was sort of developing in the background,
And so, you know, you get that, and then, you know, in the next time period, you know, hip-hop is still young, it's, you know, it's still like this really innovative thing, you know, just kind of like showing, you know, just kind of, even though we don't know a lot of their names, or the ones that we do know, we don't give them as much credit as, you know, we do, you know, men in the same time period. We're there, you know, developing it and, you know, helping it grow and making it what it is. And so that's kind of like what I wanted to do, just kind of show where this woman was at within these different music trends that were happening at the time.
And were you intending to be this shady?
Yes, I was.
Mission accomplished. God damn.
Yeah.
There was some good ass shade in this story. sometimes I just had to step away and just laugh for a few minutes and just be like, damn girl, you really said that. You really went there. So a lot of shade toward the music industry, mediocre artists, we'll just say that. Who may or may not happen to be white and male. So
Actually, also before, I just want to point out that the narrator, the woman who reading the story for the Shady Horizons, Strange Horizons podcast, that's Cherie Renee Thomas, who was one of the co-editors of this. This was a special issue, and if you don't know her, she's actually been doing a lot of really good work in speculative fiction, mm-hmm. you know, for some years. First anthology, Dark Matter, that she edited, it was like in 1998, And, you know, she, like I said, she's been doing this for a while. And honestly, I believe it's because she was one of the editors, and this is why I actually got in this, you know, issue. So she's also a fellow Southerner, and I can also tell she's a music lover as well, and she knew where this was coming from. And so,
and also, props to her. Yes. Props to her for seeing how awesome the story was, because God is really good.
Yes.
I take it from somebody who's read it several times. This is just, this is really, really good. And also really shady, which was fun too. So, to Indaloran, published author. And shady, shady individual, I give a big squeeze! Congratulations on being published!
Thank you! I'm so happy. Now let's hope it's just the beginning. Okay.
Exactly. Yes.
All right.
More stuff. More stuff. More shade. Publications. Y'all know y'all want some of this. Some of this good shade. Come and get it. INDASCORNER.
You got a bit more sense. Okay. All right. Well, on to some more publishing news. You may have heard. I hope so. But Eve Ewing is set to write the new Riri Williams Ironheart comic. Let me say that right. So yay for her. If you don't know who Eve Ewing is, she is a writer / poet out of Chicago. And her first collection of poetry, if I can find the name of it, because it's actually, I think it was released either last year or early this year, but I think it was last year. But I can't find the name of it. But anyway, she has a very critically acclaimed collection of poetry, and I think she's actually won awards for it, so I really should know the name. But anyway, she's, as you know, Riri Williams is the Iron Man spinoff. She's, you know, kind of the new Iron Man, and between her and Shuri, they are the smartest people in the Marvel Comics universe. And, excuse me, her run with the comic set to drop like November 1st, November 7th, something like that. Early November, it's set to drop. Oh yeah, Ironheart number 1, written by Eve L. Ewing with art by Kevin LaBrenda, goes on sale Wednesday, November 7th. And so, that's like a little less than 3 months. Cool.
Well into Scorpio season, the best season. So,
guess who's a Scorpio?
It's me, baby! Anyway, so to Eve Ewing and Riri Williams, we give a big squeeze! Another one of the women that we love here on Black Girl Squee is Miss Niecy Nash, who can wear a catsuit like nobody's business. She has a talk show pilot ordered at TNT, which will be called Naked with Niecy Nash, which, Lord, just a suggestion. this would be... Let me move on. This would be TNT's first late night show. And of course her other series, Claws, just got renewed for a third season. So
yay,
more of Niecy Nash in some tight ass jumpsuits, with the girls on display, and here for it.
Yes.
So get them checks, Niecy.
Yes.
Hopefully, you know, they'll order more than just the pilot, and, you know, she'll have two gigs going on. So to Niecy Nash, we give a big squee! Uh-oh, did I lose you? You still there? You there? Hello? No, I can't hear you. What happened?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, either.
Okay.
All right. So.
Okay.
So to Niecy Nash, we give a big.
Okay. And now for not so squeeworthy news, but something.
It gets
still
better.
Yeah. The French Open bans Serena Williams from wearing her Wakanda-inspired cat suit. Anyway, their ban was for next year's French Open, and they said their reasoning behind it was because it disrespects the game. Never mind that we saw that picture of that white woman from like 85 wearing a cat suit as well, but hey. As you know, that Serena, she started wearing that cat suit because she was having some issues after she had blood clots after she, you know, gave birth to her daughter, and she was wearing that to help with like her circulation and stuff like that. But apparently she did speak with the French Tennis Federation president, and she said she doesn't need to wear the cat suit anymore because compression tights will work just as well to keep her blood circulating, which I'm glad to hear, but still, that was a fuck-ass move.
It's so
it really
ridiculous
was.
And so obviously...
Thank you.
Discriminatory.
Yes.
She's not wearing it to disrespect the game. She's wearing it to ensure that she doesn't fall out
die
on the goddamn court.
Yeah.
Like, I think they would really be okay if she passed out on the court, as long as she was wearing a white skirt.
I honestly feel like that's their entire point. Because, I mean, it came out a few weeks ago that, you know, she gets drug tested like every other day. For, you know, and like, oh yeah, okay, so another random drug test, and she's just like, whatever. You know, she's handling it a hell of a lot better than I would, because I'd have burned something down by now.
Meanwhile, like, she's handling all this bullshit very gracefully.
Yeah.
And it couldn't be me, but Maria Sharapova is over there using
still,
all kinds of...
Yeah. Super serums. She's using Captain America super serums and still
not
can't
not
win.
It, nope. Nope. So, like, those drug testers actually be hiding in the bushes and shit. Like, we gonna catch her now. Trying to catch Serena and doing some wild shit.
Yep. Like, she out here living her best life with her husband who don't know none. That pretty ass baby of theirs. She ain't worried about y'all.
Not worried. Like, That's why she can handle stuff like this with such grace, because she's got a lot of good shit in her life to, to make up for this petty bullshit from the French Tennis Federation. Well, fuck them. But yeah, so hopefully, I mean, if they try to pull some shit about compression tights, then they'll just be showing their whole ass out there, but we'll see what happens.
Exactly. Yep.
She's about to hopefully crush it in the US Open pretty soon, so we'll see what goes on with her there. And also Venus. And to Serena, we give a big squeak! Also, her and Sloane Stephens are like two of the highest paid women in tennis. So, no black women. And just some quick music news. Janet Jackson dropped a new song called Made For Now. And released a new video, which is really, really fun. It kind of brings back to mind her video for All Right, where it's like a, you know, a block party thing, but also, you know, very, very colorful and kind of a period piece because they're all in zoot suits and stuff like that. But, you know, she's had a lot of escapade. It brings to mind escapade and runaway and stuff like that. It's just very, very colorful, very cultural, lots of dancing, lots of beautiful black people. And, yes, so Janet's back and she performed the song on Fallon and on The Tonight Show. And she comes out at the beginning of the song in that, in you know, that wicker chair that you see in that picture of Huey P. Newton? She's in a wicker chair just like that. And she's singing like the first verse of the song from that chair, looking every bit like the next Huey P. Newton. I'm like, yes, Janet, go for this icon. I see you with this iconography. I see you, girl. And yes, Janet is still doing the damn thing. I just also had to highlight this new song from Now with producer, I think, Muramasa.
Yeah, let's just say that.
Yeah. It's the song is called Complicated, and I don't know, just the way that she's riding the beat and singing this song, it just really gets me. Like, it just gets me, like, you know, nodding my head and with a screw face. Like, she is, something about this song, she is really doing it. It's working. This production is really working for her. So it's a jam. Check that out.
I like her voice anyway. Yeah. And I like sometimes when you just work with just the right producer who knows how to use it, you know, that's always a good thing.
So hopefully we'll be hearing more from Now in the form of a second album. Hint,
yes.
So now we're going to get to our special segment. As we said at the top of the show, we're about celebrating Black femme genius, and I can't think of a greater example of such than one Miss Aretha Louise Franklin, who passed away August 16th. Due to pancreatic cancer, but left us a treasure trove of music to just explore, from her years at Columbia to those years at Atlantic that everybody raves about. Where she worked with the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, and had hits like I Never Loved a Man the Way That I Loved You, Of Course Respect, Dr. Feel Good, all those good songs. Then, so it was Columbia, Atlantic, then was it Arista?
I think so.
Cause yeah, cause Arista is I think that's when I was I that's when I was born,
Yeah.
and that was the Jump to It, Get It Right, Aretha era. And what was after Arista? RCA?
I don't
I
know.
don't remember. But those are, see, this is how many black women artists have eras like this? I
Yeah.
mean, her career spanned like 6 decades. She was doing this since she was like a teenager. So I just wanted to take a moment to celebrate her work and her legacy without, getting sidetracked into the debates that have been raging on Twitter lately. Like, really don't want to do that. Because they were talking about everything but Aretha's artistry. So, if you, Aretha was a peerless vocalist. And by that, I mean, I don't see, there's not anybody that can touch her. Like, there's some that can hit the notes, but there's some other qualities to her voice and to her talent that just the empathy that's in her voice, that she lends to the songs that she performs, just some qualities that can't really be defined, that are hard to pin down, that a lot of other vocalists just don't have. And also, she could sing just about any genre. Rock, blues, gospel, R&B, opera, house music. Just, yeah, she could do just about anything. She's also an accomplished pianist who learned by ear since she was 4 years old. And she was a blues woman. When you hear some of those songs that she wrote in that Atlantic era, like Dr. Feel Good, that's blues. Spirit in the Dark.
Yeah, I don't know if she, I don't think she wrote it, but I never loved a man the way that I love you.
That's some
That's a
blues.
blues.
That's straight up blues. The way she sang it was a blues. You no good, heartbreaker. You're a liar. You're a cheat.
Cheat.
Good God.
And I don't know why I let you do these
Same
things to
thing.
me.
Well, she came out the gate. Like, you ain't shit.
Yep. But I loved your ass. I don't know why.
I mean, this is basically the prototype to Dick to Bomb. This is like
Basically,
basically
yeah.
Dick to Bomb, but in the 60s. Also Dr.
Yes.
Feel Good. I mean, that was blatantly Dick to Bomb.
Yeah.
She
Yes.
takes care of all my pains and my ills. Oh my God, she was a mess. Okay.
Yes.
Oh God. Luther Vandross, another musician that I miss very much, said this about Dr. Feelgood. He said, "But the lyrics and her piano playing, it's like something my mama's mama listened to. One of those original ladies like Bessie Smith or Ma Rainey. I believe it's one of the greatest blues ever written." End quote. Like when she does when she did I'm having trouble do, saying speaking of her in the past tense. Just hearing her perform Dr. Feelgood, like I think there's a video of her playing it during that live at the Fillmore West. Lord. Hard. It's body and raucous and just everything that you would expect from a blues woman, from a Bessie Smith. So yeah, that was just a great quote. And she could do so many things. She also sang jazz. I mean, most of her albums at Columbia were jazz albums, and she had accomplished jazz singers pouring over her music, trying to figure out what she was doing. When you have Sarah Vaughan and Carmen McRae sitting down playing one of your first ever albums as a teenager, trying to see what the fuck this Aretha Franklin girl is doing. This is what is wild.
And had them shook.
Shook. Sarah
Had them
Vaughan
shook.
said she ain't never playing. She was never singing Skylark again.
You shook Sarah fucking Vaughan.
You took one of her signature songs from her. Sarah said, "I guess it's just Misty is my song from now on." Fuck the Skylark. You can have that, Aretha.
She didn't ask Skylark. I'll do this the other way. And pray
Well,
she don't touch
yeah,
that.
I got Misty and whatever Lola wants. Just leave me alone, Aretha. Don't come for my other songs. Lord. And she was a great vocalist, a great piano player, and a really good songwriter too. She wrote Rock Steady. She also credits Donny Hathaway with the organ section of Rock Steady. Even though she wrote the song, she credits other musicians that she worked with for some of the parts that kind of made that song go. She wrote Dr. Feelgood. She wrote Call Me, which is a beautiful ballad that I know you love, Inda.
Girl, don't even get me. Yeah, that's one of those songs I can really just consider not listening to it in public anymore. Because it just never fails to get me in my feelings. Especially when it hits that crescendo. When it hits that crescendo, baby. Like,
That's it.
it gets there and I start tearing up every time. Every time. That song just hits me in the gut. And like, her version wasn't even the first one I ever heard. I mean, it was a guy named Phil Perry. He did a cover
Yes,
of it.
I
And like,
remember that.
it was good. It was good. But then later when I finally got that compilation, you know, her 60 stuff, and that's the song they ended with. And it's just like, yeah, I like you, Phil, but
I mean,
yeah,
it's
I can't.
Aretha's song. It's Aretha's
Yeah,
song.
that is all Aretha, and man, just I don't know what she did to me at that song, but man, just
Part.
yeah.
But you taking me with you, and I'll keep you right here in my heart. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, she yeah.
Woo.
Hit the damn thing. That song.
That's some good songwriting.
And she wrote that one
She
herself.
wrote it.
Yes.
Woo. And then she proceeded to sing the shit out of it.
Yes.
Jesus
And
Christ.
just I don't know what is just perfect with that piano, those strings.
Mm.
It just, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, she also wrote Daydreaming, which is another beautiful, beautiful ballad. Oh my gosh. And her with her sister singing background are just, it was magic on top of magic.
Yep.
She wrote Think, which I feel like is another kind of feminist anthem.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
She wrote Spirit in the Dark. Who's Zooming Who?
So make even another look, tell me that. That's the urethra I grew up with as a kid.
Yeah,
so.
Me too. Yeah. I was into those earlier albums too, but Freeway of Love still goes.
Yep.
Her vocal is just really, it makes you want to sing along. I'm realizing I was playing the Aretha album, and you know, everybody, the standout track for everybody is the duet with George Michael, but for me, it's all about Jumpin' Jack Flash, because as the kids say today, she ate that cover.
Yep.
Like, she basically stole that song.
Mm-hmm.
Just like she's stolen countless other songs in the past. But
that's the thing, though. When she decided she wanted to do the cover, there wasn't really much you could do except step aside.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, some of the Rolling Stones were actually in the video and playing on the record. So they kind of handed it to her. That cover is so good. She's so good. She's playing piano on the track and singing the hell out of it, and it just rocks so hard. Like, she took Jumpin' Jack Flash to church.
Yeah, I had no idea that was a Rolling Stones song before.
And you don't, and before like, and now that you know, do you care? It's Aretha's song.
Not really, no.
It's Aretha's song. She took it. It's hers now.
Yeah.
Yes.
The little girl just took it from you.
Yep. That little girl stole my song.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. Since we don't have Kev Fade, we might as well get a little bit into this. But the way that media has been covering her life, fuck that. It seems like there's been two sets of there's been two ways that her life has been covered.
Mm-hmm.
by largely white media that just run down the salient points of her life, where she was born, grew up in the church, father was a preacher, the Atlantic years as a highlight, you know, just skip all over the Columbia years, even though there's good work to be had there. It just wasn't hitting the charts. It's just all very rote and academic, the way that coverage seems to be. And then there's coverage by black people who can provide the context but may not be as familiar with the work.
Yes.
Because they didn't there's no coverage by black people who actually grew up with Aretha in her heyday, like at the height of her powers. I feel like we missed a generation of like black women writers that could be here now writing about Aretha from a very, you know, from a place of knowing what it was like to buy the I've Never Loved a Man the Way That I Loved You album, or actually, you know, buying Amazing Grace and, you know, listening to it and feeling your face melt off, like, you know? It's interesting, and I hate using that word. I need to find another word, because interesting has been run down to the ground, but it's just it's disorienting to see these different ways that her life has been covered, and it's like you're all approaching some sort of truth but never quite getting there. I don't know, it's just never quite hitting me where I want it to hit. Social media is worse, but
I mean, the thing is, I think it's fine and good to acknowledge, you know, the things that were happening in her life and the things that, you know, probably had an effect on, you know, how, you know, she sang, you know, what she decided she wanted to sing. And, you know, that's fine and good, because, you know, she's human. You know, that's fine. You know, and all of that, you know, she does need to be, you know, seen as a well-rounded, you know, human being in all of her complications. But it's also one of the things that I found out that I kind of like, excuse me, I do kind of like more of, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, I associate this song with, you know, this point in, you know, my own life, and this is what it, you know, it meant to me. And I like that, because it's like, that's what it was about. Like, if she didn't have an effect on you in some way, she wouldn't have ended up being who she was. She had that ability to touch you, you know, with her music, with her songs in some kind of way. And I think, you know, in this, like you say, it's all academic in that rush to try to figure out, well, not figure out, but, like, just kind of dissect what it meant, you know, as, you know, on this whole, you know, societal thing like that. I think that gets lost. And it's just kind of, it's really just kind of detached. Like, you can't be detached from music. You cannot be detached from Aretha Franklin's music.
Yes, that you can't use that kind of detachment about soul music.
Thank you.
And it's 'cause soul, a lot of what's great about soul is the feeling it gives you.
Yes.
So, and Aretha knew that better than anybody. That's why you feel everything she sings.
Yes.
And just to use that kind of clinical, kind of academic detachment with her and her work?
Yes.
Nah, yes. It's never going to be, that's not it. That's not it. It's never going to get it. So, I'm not happy with any of that. You can miss me with all of the debates about the debates on Twitter, because y'all don't want to talk about the music, because y'all don't know the music, y'all don't want to get to know the music, y'all just want to cast the tribute like it's a movie or something like that, and that just got on my nerves. But, Inda, take it away. I think you had a message for somebody.
Oh, okay. Well, not just her, but also VMAs. Seriously, fuck y'all.
Mm-hmm. Y'all didn't even try. Y'all
did not. Like, of all people, y'all really thought Madonna was going to say something substantial about Aretha Franklin? Y'all thought that she had the range to say something substantial about Aretha Franklin? like, oh my, see, I'll leave this name out of it because that's how a whole lot of stuff got started, but it's like somebody said, when you have something for a white audience, this is what you're going to get. But why are y'all so afraid to have black women come on your shows, you know, speak, you know, perform, because you like us when we're performing.
Yeah.
You really do.
Yeah.
And pay tribute to the woman who paved the way for them. And quite frankly, pay tribute to the woman who inspired, quite frankly, a lot of white artists to do things. I mean, like Carole King wrote Natural Woman for her. Simon and Garfunkel wrote Bridge Over Troubled Water with her in mind.
Yep.
You know, apparently Paul McCartney did write Let It Be with her in mind. And they made some great songs with that. And then she did what she does and like, yeah, let me do this to it. But y'all did not, y'all failed. Y'all really failed. Even just finding some singers who had, you know, more heft to their voice. Hell, do y'all have anything against older, you know, artists who are not white men like Bob Dylan or whatnot? Do you have anything against them?
Yes, they have everything against them.
Because these were her peers.
If you're not Beyonce, they don't want your black ass on their show.
Y'all could have had some of her peers on the hill. You could have had, you know, hell, you could have brought Paul Simon. Because, and hell, he didn't have to perform. Just say, let him tell what he was thinking when he wrote the song, you know, with her in mind. You could have done any of that. But Madonna? Madonna is not, you can, you know, argue her greatness or her legacy or whatever you want to, but she is never in the same class or the same league as Aretha Franklin. She will never be. I can't even believe I said their names in the same sentence.
Yeah. Did you see that post going around Twitter where there's a picture of Aretha and the picture of Prince, and the dialogue is,
yes!
Y'all, she fucked mine up too.
Yep.
I'm like,
look, just don't even get me started on what she did to black queer people and to boost her own career.
Well,
because that's the part that makes me angry.
Yeah. We might see that in season 2 of Pose, though, because they're having a time jump. And looking forward to more shade about that. But yeah, that was really bad. That was really bad.
I mean, even you could have just, you know, announced on the show, well, we'll be doing this later. We'll have another diva show in her honor. That's what they could have done.
Oh, you know what would have been better would be a bunch of clips of her performing.
Exactly.
A montage of her performing hit songs or whatever, and just Aretha Franklin, 1942, 2018. Boom.
Yeah.
That would have been better
yeah.
than that fuckery you televised the other night.
Hell, somebody could have just done a GIF of her, like the way they did David Bowie and Prince, just showing all their different looks throughout the years. Somebody could have done that for Aretha. That would have been better.
Yeah. But, you know, they're going to make excuses and say, well, Aretha wasn't a video era musician. Bullshit. She had the duet. She had a video for the duet with the Eurythmics. She had a video for the duet
yep.
with George
yep.
Michael. She had that
she
Rock-A-Lot.
Had plenty.
She had that Rock-A-Lot video yep. that haunted my nightmares when I was a kid. some of us in puppets. I didn't like them puppets.
Oh, my God.
I remember that. But she had the video, the Jumping Jack Flash.
Yep. I was about to say, she had several videos from the Who's in the Who album.
Freeway of Love.
Yep.
Yep.
That's one of the first I remember,
yeah.
Freeway of Love.
So
that was probably the first time I ever saw Aretha Franklin.
Wow.
You know, her spiky hair.
Yeah. She had the video for Jumpin' Jack Flash, which I can't find
yep.
on the internet. Give me back
Jimmy
that
Lee.
video. I need it. Jimmy Lee. This one's for me, and I'll always remember history, biology, and the magic of December. Lord, okay. All right. That was another really good song from the Aretha album. Put some respect on its name.
Yeah.
80s Aretha, y'all want to focus on the 60s stuff, and the 60s stuff was fire. I'm not going to debate you on that. I mean, that stuff is always going to be ridiculously good.
Yes.
But don't sleep on her earlier stuff with Columbia. Don't sleep on the 80s stuff. Don't sleep on that house cover she did. A Deeper Love. That's a jam. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And please don't sleep on Sparkle. She
yeah.
did a whole album with my man Curtis Mayfield.
Yep. Yep.
Like two geniuses together. Good God.
Yeah.
Have mercy. Ah.
And it's as good as you think it is.
So fucking good.
I'm like, I grew up on 80s Aretha. That was my introduction to Aretha.
Yeah.
I'm not going to forget that. Like, hell, it took me a while to figure out that she'd been doing it since the 50s and 60s. That took me a long time to figure out, like, oh, that's her.
Don't let white people tell you that all she did was sing Respect.
Yeah.
You can't last in the business for 60 something years if your only good song is that one. Even though it was a ridiculously good cover.
Yeah.
Like, she reworked the entire song. But yeah, it's ridiculously good. Her Atlantic work is ridiculously good, but so is some of the other stuff too. I mean, Amazing Grace. She did a double disc gospel album, and you lived. You got your whole entire life to that gospel album. Yeah. Like, she was always gospel. She could take any genre and bring it back to the church. So it was never like she had one foot in secular and one foot in gospel. She was always gospel, but she could do so much other stuff, so why not do it?
For a while she was one of the only black women I wasn't really worried about her legacy being respected, you know, whenever, you know, it was time for her to transition. But it's like, now I'm like, y'all really,
they trying it. But I mean, when you have a body of work this large and this, for the most part, this good
and varied,
yes, I mean, how can you deny that unless you're just virulently, blatantly racist and sexist?
This woman took down an opera song that she probably learned like a week before.
No, they asked her to do it 20 minutes before the taping.
20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Because I know Pavarotti was sick and he asked her to step in for him, but 20 minutes?
I mean...
And... Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I thought maybe she had a day or two. I swear, I thought maybe she had a day or two.
I mean,
you know,
unless these articles are lying, because they keep saying 20 minutes, but I don't know, maybe there was some discussion.
I mean, I know
in the background.
I don't know. I mean, I know she knew some opera because she said she grew up listening to it. I'm not surprised about that. But it's like, I thought she at least had like a day or two, because I didn't hear any flaws in that performance.
I mean, genius.
Okay,
how much?
20 minutes. Okay.
Genius.
Okay, I'm going to cry again now.
Okay, yes. I mean,
How did you throw down an opera song in 20 minutes?
When you're a fucking genius.
God damn.
She grew up listening to different jazz singers and could imitate them. That's how good her ear was. She would listen to jazz singers that her brother would play on the radio and then could imitate them each.
Oh, okay.
This is what we're talking about. She was a musical genius.
Yeah.
So yeah, Pavarotti, 20 minutes, no problem.
Okay. Yeah.
Light work. It's light work to read.
Yeah. Okay.
This is what we're talking about. This is what I just want to focus on and celebrate, because there will never be another one like Miss Aretha Franklin.
When you are good enough to snatch your own wig while you're singing.
When you that good. Wow. You gotta step back and kiss yourself. You that good. So,
yeah.
So I just want to focus on that. Yeah, we lost a treasure, but hopefully she rests in peace. And certain people in the White House can keep her name out their mouth and
leave. Police. Just do us that favor.
Don't be like, ooh, bah, yeah. And
it was the worst.
Yeah, that's how he views black people. Even the greatest among us are just servants to him. So, certain Madonna Ciccones can keep Aretha's name out her mouth, and also stop appropriating other people's culture. And
please,
And certain people, if you don't know nothing about somebody's music, don't go pretending like you know how to organize a tribute to them.
And, please.
That's all I'm going to say about that, because that whole thing on Twitter just blew up. And it wasn't even about Aretha anymore. And that's just a shame.
Yeah.
Like, you go so far away from the topic, but you still want to lead the discussion, and I'm just tired. And Aretha's too great and too brilliant to waste time talking about everything that isn't Aretha. So, hopefully we focus mostly on Aretha and her great work. And, you know, just if you can listen to some Aretha today and every day, just, yeah, do that. It will enrich your life. And if you want to actually talk about her music, you know, hit me up. If you want to talk about all the other bullshit, just miss me. The end.
All right.
With that, womanist vocab.
Okay, so womanist vocab, I want to revisit something we've already been over, but apparently we need to go over it again.
Oh.
So today's womanist vocab word is misogynoir. Misogynoir is a term that intersects the racism, anti-blackness, and misogyny directly affecting black women's experiences. Simply put, misogynoir means hatred for and toward black women. While it is unique to black women may perpetuate misogynoir toward each other, along with others of any race and gender. And this was a term coined by Moya Bailey, massage noir.
Yes. Thank you, published author Inda Lauren, for Women as a Vocab. So, once again, Black Girl Squee is on Twitter, Tumblr, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play Podcasts. We do have a Patreon if you want to slip a few coins in the collection plate or some fold money. That's patreon.com/blackgirlsqueen. Inda's Twitter is at Inda's Corner. I'm at Death's Daughter. Our podcast Twitter is at Black Girl Squee. And our email is blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. And you can check out all of our past episodes at blackgirlsquee.supportcast.fm. So until next time, bye!